Welcome to Grief is My Side Hustle. I am really honored today to be sitting down with the author of Tommy's Field, Nikki Mark. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
I have to say, I just said this to you off mic. I read a ton of grief books. I get to talk to grievers. It's like the honor of my lifetime. I spent a lot of time crying reading your book. So I can't guarantee I'm not going to get super emotional while we're talking about it now. It's such an incredibly poignant story. I also have sons who are, I have one who's 14 and one who is turning 12. I think that helps us when we're reading books to personally connect, and also as part of how we get our hearts ripped out of us. The question I always ask people when we get started is just, can you tell us what has brought you into the world of grief and loss?
Yeah, I was a working mom. I had a busy life. And then one day, my 12-year-old son, Tommy, who was a happy, healthy kid, just went to sleep one night and the next morning never woke up. And that was the day everything changed and I experienced grief in its wildest and biggest form.
Yeah. Oh, it's a breathtaking description, yeah. Right? That if you hear, my mother went to sleep and didn't wake up, but she was 75. Your son was 12.
Yeah.
So it just stops reality. There's something you say in the book about how you die. Can you talk a little bit about that? You use those descriptions about yourself. And I think it's one of the ways that you frame the book. Can you just talk about how you think about the experience?
If I understand the question correctly, when he left, I died. And everything, every cell, every thought, every piece of my history suddenly evaporated. And I had no idea who I was. I had no idea who I would be. I didn't even know how I would take another breath. It just took everything out of me.
Yeah. And you talk about becoming a whole new person.
Yeah, I come from the world of startups. So I did startup companies for 20 plus years. And so I was trained to create something out of nothing. I knew how to take a first step towards something as long as there was a vision. The problem was I had no vision. But the truth is I did find a vision that very day, something that would pull me out of it and make me take a step forward. And so I essentially, as I died that day, something else completely opened up and awakened. My senses changed. Who I was talking to changed. The way I viewed the world changed. What was important changed. Suddenly, so much was so meaningless.
Yeah.
And so many other things, or actually a few other things, were so important. And so I say in the book that I basically died and awakened at the very same time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. There's something about the transformation, right? That it's all rapid. And it makes me think about your son, who I want you to talk about, but the book is called Tommy's Field, and I'm not giving anything away because there's a soccer ball on the cover, to say that part of this is the journey to making something that was a dream become reality. But your son is exquisitely described in this book in a way that, like, I could feel him. And that also is a big energetic part of the book for you, is that pretty much instantly you, your husband, and your other son begin to feel him.
Yeah. It was instant. It was instant. I looked up. I was like, where are you? I just knew. I was not spiritual. I was not religious. I was a busy working mom. What had happened is 3 days prior, we drove to his soccer match. And in that long drive, he asked me if it was possible to go to sleep and not wake up. So he also asked me, or he said to me, it must be difficult for a parent to lose a child. And we had this whole discussion about life and death, and how proud I was of him. I reviewed his whole life with him. He asked if I had ever seen a psychic. He just had all these questions that we had never pondered as a family before. And so when he left, I thought back to that conversation and I thought to myself, what is this? Wait, this is some sort of bigger plan. Yeah. My son came, he did his part, And now I'm supposed to do something with this, as is my husband, as is my younger son. I don't know what their thing is, but me, I'm going to figure this out. I was a startup person, so I was going to figure this out and create something new and decide, is it first and foremost, is it possible to heal a mother's broken heart? Is it possible? And I was going to try, because I kept seeing and hearing and feeling things I never had seen and heard and felt before. My younger son started having the same experience. And yeah, as I started writing, I wasn't writing a book. I was just writing to survive. I was writing to process. That was my default way of going through difficult times. And I hadn't really done that since probably high school, where I just started writing and every
green
day,
journal.
My green journal, and it turned into writing to Tommy every day. Yeah. I still do it every day.
You do.
And I've stayed connected with him throughout this whole writing process till through today.
There's so many things in this that I relate to. So I'm just saying that out loud to my audience, that there are so many aspects of how you came into kind of understanding who you were in terms of how you were transformed. And this one that does feel both holy and remarkable, and you have this questioning disbelief all at the same time, is this idea that maybe there's a way that he is communicating with you and communicating with him. And I know that also happens for your husband and for your son, but can you just maybe talk a little bit about who Tommy was and what kind of a kid he was? Because I think that also plays a big part in how he then continues to show up in conversation with you.
Yeah, he his first two words were outside, go outside. Like, he just, before mother, before father, it was like, let's go. And so he was the kind of kid that was always playing and playing hard. And he played every sport he could possibly try. And when he played them, it was like he had played them lifetimes before. Yeah. And so it was, I never really realized it until he left, but it just wasn't normal.
Yeah.
He sang and danced as if he had done them lifetimes before. He would get on a horse and start galloping and penning different cows and horses as if he had done them lifetimes before. And so I looked at him that weekend before he left, and I reviewed his life, and I said, I'm just so proud. You do so many things that you love and you just go for it. Like, you sing on stage and you dance and you're always joking, and your friends are really important to you. Like, he was just going every minute of the day. I would have to try to slow him down. And in retrospect, it was like he was living as if he only had almost 13 years. And I felt, and I said to him, there's so many things I wish I did as a kid that you're doing. And I felt like when he left, oh, he came to show me how to do this thing called life. He came to show me how to play, how to go for my dreams, how to take risks, how to laugh, what was important. And that was like my biggest aha. When someone leaves, you know exactly what's missing.
Yeah. There's something so powerful about, so I have an almost 12-year-old and a 14-year-old. And so you describe him so vividly, and he's so different than my kids. Although I also have a soccer lover, and who, European League soccer is his deep passion. It's all he cares about. What I was also struck by was that there was like, and maybe this is just what parenting is, but he comes into the world, like, he's practicing in the morning. He doesn't just do soccer. He does Krav Maga. He's just this athlete and a good friend. And it doesn't sound like people are just extolling him because he's no longer here. This sounds like the truth of who your child was. And what I was really noticing in the book is that is so appreciated by the people around him, including you. You were, is it Hungarian? You guys were going to get citizenship so that he could, in fact, play abroad. He wasn't talking about, I want to make the local traveling team. He was talking about wanting to play in the European leagues.
Yeah, Tommy was a really big connector. His preschool director called him the mayor because he would talk to everybody as if they were the most important people in the world. He didn't care if you were a janitor, the gardener, the director of the school, a parent, or a child. Like, he just wanted to play with you, have some fun, and chit chat. And so he built a very strong community, and he built a very strong one through soccer. Yeah. All around the city of the region of Southern California. And he was a West Side kid who wanted to play East. He wanted to play with Hispanic kids. He loved diversity. He didn't like, it was just wild being his mom. And he was always in the center of attention. He was always joking. He was always tricking people. He was quite frankly lying a lot, exaggerating. Like, he was just wild. And he was not perfect. He would, it was
Your
not
younger
easy.
son says that. He says he's rough. Yeah.
He was rough, and he was emotional and passionate. He would just say things that he meant, but at the end of the day, he was telling girls he loved them and to believe in themselves. And he was telling boys the same thing and calling them on their birthday. Very thoughtful, very giving,
Yeah.
and wanted to be a total star, like just flashy and sizzly and play simple Tommy. Yeah, no, I'm not playing simple. He just wanted to be a star. And he told me when he was, I think, 8 or 9 years old, get ready, mom, I'm leaving by the time I'm 15. I'll be going to play in Europe. And I said, okay, I'm sure there'll be a way. Good luck. But I never thought he meant he would be leaving forever. Yeah.
Yeah. I really was struck as a mom. I really was struck by how you were supporting his love of soccer. You learned, was it Hungarian? Do I have that right? That you learned the language again and had to take a citizenship. There's some things with the people that I have lost in my life that I'm grateful that I went to unbelievable efforts on their behalf, or that right before my dad died, I gave him a brand new iPad and somebody said to me, like, that must have felt like a waste. And I was like, oh, you've never lost anyone. I'm so grateful that I gave him that stupid expensive iPad. And there was something about knowing what was going to be happening and watching you make this Herculean and Tommy-like effort on his behalf to make this happen that just seemed so beautiful and sacred to me. I want to ask you about the spirituality stuff. I'm so grateful. I think it's why I read most of the book in one sitting. And I'll just say this. So my story, the listeners know, is that my mom died suddenly while I was on vacation with her 2 years after my dad did. And I immediately got really sick with what, and you write about your rapid thinking, but my thought was that it was my fault that she died. And it was such a big thought. It was such a big belief. I just couldn't get myself out from underneath it. And it made me pretty sick. I had some experiences that were hard for me to talk about in the beginning. Then I couldn't stop talking about them. And now I've integrated them and I'm like, I can't explain them with science. They make me wildly uncomfortable. And yet I know them to be facts. So that's the way. One is that my youngest son, who I think of as strongly intuitive, was in England with my husband. I was in Massachusetts with my mom, and he had nightmares every night. And what he said when he woke up was, I'm afraid someone I love is going to die. And then my mom did die 5 days later. And he woke up 7 days in a row with that. And then what he said to me was the day she died, he wasn't trying to cause me pain, as he said, oh, that thing in my stomach is gone now. And I was like, okay, so I know that's real. And when I was driving away from my mom's house, I was going to pick up my godson. The way that I learned that my mother died is I had the sensation of water breaking. I wasn't pregnant, of course. I just looked down because I expected to see gushing water. And then I had a clear thought. It didn't come in like a voice, but I could see the words, and it was, she died. And she had died. So I haven't met very many people who are willing to talk so openly or write so openly without maybe turning it into a Christian Jesus story, which I'm not disparaging. I'm just saying that yours has the same discomfort as mine, and also the same peace and reconciliation as mine, I think. And you do the same thing that I did, which is I went and talked to intuitives. So can you just talk about that peace and what it means to you? Is it comforting? Is it not comforting? Did it help you know which direction to go in? Did it haunt you at night? I know some of the answers from the book, but we get asked about this on the podcast so often, for people to say, help me understand what happens, where do they go, and what's possible?
So I had no religion. I had no spirituality. My son doesn't wake up, and all of a sudden, I literally feel my head crack open, tingling, and I hear a voice. And it's not mine. It has no sound. and it tells me what to do. It starts to tell me, let everyone in your home. Everyone was coming. My husband was very open. I was very private. I was like, oh my God, he just put it on Facebook. I couldn't believe it. But then I just knew we're in this together. We've got to just find our way. And as our home filled up, I heard this voice. This is not just about you. Tell them what you need. And the voice continued to guide me day after day. I surrendered completely. I sat there and I put my arms out literally, and I had no religion. I was the least of a believer. And I said, I surrender. What do you want me to do? I'll do whatever you want.
And it wasn't a voice, right? It wasn't a sound. It was,
but I heard it.
Words. Yeah. So, so I just want to say that out loud again, because people ask about the minutia of this. So I describe that as a knowing and something I can see almost out of the corner of my eye, even though I can't really see it. You've described it as a voice that has no words. So I think we're saying the same thing. And I love that description. And so talk to us about where that brought you, because you do go and I think directly communicate as well.
Yeah. It was hard to sleep, but when I did shut my eyes, all of a sudden symbols were coming at me, big giant hearts flashing at me, like illustrations almost. I had never had that kind of dream before. Mm. And then I started having visitors and like old people talking to me and teachers and giving me messages. And I couldn't deny what they were saying. And they would repeat it three times every time in my dream until I woke up. Sometimes I heard, Mom, wake up, write this down. Sometimes it was no sound, but sometimes in a dream, it was so loud. It was music pumping in. It was love songs pumping in. It was like he was singing to me, because he loved music so much, and communicating to me through music. And I heard it so loud, it would wake me up. And so that was the beginning of, what is this?
Yeah.
And then we had televisions coming on
yeah.
without, in the middle of the night, it never happened before. Yeah. Music coming on through my phone with no ring.
Yeah.
I started to see lights flickering everywhere, as my younger son did too, which we never noticed before. But I also started seeing flashes of air when I was sitting and writing at night in my journal to him in the bed. All these flashes of air around me would start. And honestly, it saved me, because it made me really curious. What is this? Is there really magic in this world? And I had always heard that people could communicate with spirits. And I thought to myself, if people could create airplanes and rockets and stuff, I can't fathom that. I guess it's possible. So not only did I want to know if I could learn to heal a broken heart, and wouldn't that be an interesting startup for myself? Because if I could learn to fully live again, which I had to do, because I was committed to honoring him by building his legacy and surviving for my younger son, but not just surviving, being the mother he needed me to be.
Yeah.
So I had to start healing my heart. Was it possible? And so not only was that my mission, but then it became, is it possible that I could connect with my son's spirit and keep growing and learning with him? Is that even possible? And I thought to myself, I've had my whole rest of my life to at least find out.
Right.
It might be crazy. I can spend the rest of my life finding out because I think it's fun. And what if there's that chance?
Yeah.
That small chance. I am so all in if there's even the smallest chance.
That's what I was thinking about when I was reading it, because even shortly after my mom died, I had a lot of things that I think someone who was not in as much pain as me, or maybe that's not the right description, who was in a different mindset, would have maybe found comfort in, things like discovering a butterfly, which is like a Christian resurrection symbol. You guys have hawks. We had crows. There were plenty of things that I think actually were there to communicate that I was like, that's just a random thing that's happening. When I was writing and reflecting back, I was like, oh shit, look at all that stuff that was right there. But I know that there are people who are listening right now that would do anything to feel what you felt. So I'm curious if you have any ideas about that. Do you have any ideas about why one family or one mom might feel these things and one might not?
I have a couple thoughts on that.
Yeah.
The first is probably the most real world thought,
yep.
which is my mother told me when I was in my 20s, and she's from Chicago and very conservative in her views and never lies and all that, that she had seen her grandmother's spirit waking her up every morning, and that she had to go see a medium because someone told her grandmother must want something. So she and my father went to see one of the famous mediums in the world now, but at the time was working out of his apartment for $75 right. and no one knew him. And there was no internet. There was no right. way, there were no cell right. phones. There was nothing. And her grandmother came through, and all this information came in that stunned both of them about the whole family. And so I feel in a way, and by the way, the grandmother never came and visited her again. That was it. And so I felt like when Tommy left and I said to my best friend, I want to see a medium, it was because I knew that my mother had, there was something important for her. So that's when I did. And I felt like also in that moment, if she had that ability to see a grandmother's spirit and I believed her, there must be something in my line, my family line.
Yeah.
I also, this is just a brief point that you brought up earlier. I had Hungarian great-grandparents. I learned 6 months before Tommy passed away that they had lost a 12-year-old boy too.
I was going to ask you about this.
So I also instantly, I thought this is some sort of plan when Tommy left, not only because of the conversation we had before he left, but because I had known, I had only recently learned, wait a minute, I have great-grandparents who lost a child and nobody knew about this.
Yeah.
And same age and instantly, and there must be a cycle in my family. So those two things were like tangible.
Yeah. Predisposing you to believe. Yeah.
To believe. But then my head was tingling for at least 3 years. It still tingles when something is going to drop in. This was a physical feeling that I had. I became so open because my heart was so broken and open
that
I could walk by someone and feel their energy and it would topple me over. I would have to move to the side. If I went to a yoga class and someone was too close, it was like too big. I could feel them. I never had this ability before, but I think that the more curious I got, the more I read, the more I opened up, the more I quite honestly slowed down because I was a really busy working mom. And if you had ever told me to meditate or to do yoga, yoga to breathe, not to work out, I would have told you I'm not that person.
Wrong girl.
But suddenly I couldn't do more than lie down for 45 minutes and try to calm my nervous system and calm my brain. And I noticed that the more I did, the more vivid the dreams I was having started to come, the more I could hear, the more I could see. And year after year, I said to my husband only recently, look at that white light over there. When you see white lights, what do you see? And he's like, I see a white light. And I said, I don't. I see rainbows all around them. White lights are no longer white lights to me. I see that. He's like, you're crazy. And then he looked it up and he saw, oh, actually, the spectrum of the rainbow is a white light. So it's interesting. That's how it's happened. And I think you do have to want it and open up to it. And just the more you do, it's like wherever you put your intention, as long as you don't force it, you start to manifest it. It's almost like you do create the world you believe.
Yeah. There's a really powerful to me scene where your son, Donovan, Tommy's younger brother, talks about that you guys have chosen to be a family and you've chosen to be in relationship, and that there are different times when maybe you're a daughter, or he's the father, and he's pretty little, right? He's 10 when Tommy dies. And I just, there's something so powerful about hearing from children about how they think the world is organized in this way that we don't have any science to make that make any sense, but there are so many pieces in your life that sort of echo that, like maybe you guys have been doing this for a long time together, and that maybe somebody only ever gets to be 12 years old, that you have a history of it in your family, which did it just stop my heart when you discovered that, because that was not something that was known until you were doing like your family tree work. And I just want to say to the audience, and actually, I've never really said it like this. So I've worked as a trauma therapist pretty much my whole career and not really understood what it was to be pulled into a helping profession or trauma sort of body-centered work, but always knowing that was the work that I wanted to do. And I had multiple mentors say to me, we can teach you in words what you're already doing. And what I was already doing, which people came to teach me, is that I get a sensation in my body, I have since I was small, of freezing cold that runs from like fingertip to fingertip. And when I go, and it comes like a wave. And when that happens, I now describe that as like the truth of the truth, that there is something like irrevocably pure and true in what is either being said, or, and that my truth is probably connecting to somebody else's truth. So as a therapist, I always waited for that energy. And then I knew that's where you accelerate. We're in the truth. And so this is where change happens. When my mom died and my central nervous system got so dysregulated, and it's 4.5 years ago, but I'm still not, I will never go back to being who I was. I went back to work after taking 6 months off and doing all the things, all the yoga, all the EMDR. I went back to work and I love my clients dearly. And realized that I was too open, that there was too much energy, like a gum wrapper that had been peeled open for me to do the work anymore. So I don't actually work as a trauma therapist in that way anymore because of exactly how you just described it. Something about the obliteration in the grief transformed me in a way that's open in a beautiful way to my life and my own calling, but is not totally safe to drive the bus for everybody else.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when you're so decimated by loss, many of us are not designed to be and do what and who we were before.
That's right.
It's just, my husband went back to work after a couple of weeks. He encouraged me to do the same because it was very comforting to him, and maybe it would help me. And my brain for at least 2 years didn't even function the same way.
Right. Yeah.
It was physical. It was emotional. I had physical symptoms throughout my body. I was going to get very sick. And the only thing that made me feel lighter was this understanding and belief system of there may be more here. And it was coming at me from all different directions. I couldn't deny it. And it was the only thing that helped really pull me forward and push me from the inside. And it wasn't a choice.
Yeah. Yeah. I understood that. And I feel like, again, the trajectory is like in concentrate, right? Because it's the very first day that Tommy has died, and suddenly you are already beginning to touch into the idea that creating something in his memory, but I have chills right now when I'm saying this, it's more than just his, we're going to put a bench on a field. It's an action. It's a verb that you're creating that matches the energy of your child. And you get this idea, this like idea for this action, and it locks in. It's not that there's no, maybe not, that sounds like a lot of whatever, or maybe I'm just grieving. It's like it locks in and you begin to get the drop-ins of like how to do that, even though it is holy hella hard. Listening to the story, reading the story, it made me want to pull my hair out. My mom was on a library board for a short period of time. And it was like, the stories were funny about how hard it was to get like a new series of books funded by the library. And also just soul crushing to understand what happens in community bureaucracies. But you are given this message. Can you talk a little bit about this act of purpose that kind of found its way to you right away?
So during that drive to a soccer game before he left. He asked me what my next job would be. I did startups. I had just finished one a couple months prior, and he was already sick of me being around. So he's, "What's your next job, Mom?" And I said, "I don't know yet, but I want it to be something really meaningful. I'm just craving something a little bit." And I didn't know what that was. But in the meanwhile, I would like to refurbish this dirt field with holes in the local park down the street and give everyone a place to play. And he said, "That's so cool, Mom. We have nothing like that in our neighborhood. I can't wait to play on it." And it's true, Los Angeles really suffers from a lack of playing fields for kids. And we have sunshine year round, and we have more youth sports
Dry
than
and
we can handle. So we, yeah, they're dry. And when he left, another soccer mom who was in my house sat down with me and said, "Let's build that field, Nikki." She knew I wanted to. And we gathered our community. Within a day, it was that day, it was Tommy's field. I had already been in connection with the city of LA about the possibilities of it. And I emailed them that day. And I said, I could barely type. I could barely speak. And it took me probably an hour just to write a sentence. Could we, if we raise the money, can we call it Tommy's Field? Here's what happened. "Yes, we love it. We've done this before." And so we started that day. Next day, all of a sudden, we had I had an action. Not only was it to survive and persevere for my younger son, not only was it, is it possible to connect spiritually, but now I had a real world physical action to help me move forward, to raise over $1 million, to honor Tommy's spirit of play, which is what connected him so broadly across his community, and build this Tommy's field in a local public park for generations of kids to play on. What a beautiful way to honor him. And it became this amazing community effort that we could all pour our grief into. And we raised the money, and everybody came out. Kids were selling lemonade.
Yeah, that was so beautiful, the way the money was raised. It was like everybody got to put nickels in.
And when it's all for the right reasons, it's all for a good cause, it's all driven by love, everybody supported. I had people I didn't even know coming out to help and support in ways. And it did become a political drama I never expected. But the truth is, the more I began healing on the inside, the more I started making progress on the field on the outside, and vice versa. Like, it was this reciprocal relationship. And I began to understand for the first time how much who we are and how we really feel on the inside impacts what we can do in the life we experience on the outside. And so Tommy's Field became a microcosm of kind of our world in many ways. But it's also just a symbol of who he was. Like, let's play, people, all of us.
And it also, I think, and you seemed really cognizant of this, he was so well loved by people across so many communities. People needed to feel connected to doing something. Like, I think this is what David Kessler talks about, is like finding meaning, which sometimes makes people want to roll their eyes. Don't tell me to find meaning in my child. That's not really what he's talking about. He's not saying, not to speak for him, but he's not saying, oh, let's make this okay. I think part of what you show us so beautifully, and it starts right away, is that when you are transformed, when you die and then you come and you're reborn, you have to figure out how to live. And finding something new in this new life, and for you, it's really hard, it doesn't look like it's going to be hard in the beginning. It looks like it's going to be, but I'm so struck by, you are a hard worker. It sounds like your whole family are hard workers. It requires a lot from you. And that seems, it's not that you, when you write about it, it doesn't, it's not that it seems, oh, you're thrilled by how hard it is, but it does seem to lock you into your commitment over and over again. And the fact that your detractors are just, they're borderline insane. They just, which again, I just really appreciated the frankness with which you wrote about it. Like, this person is saying, oh, we don't want the open space, and then we have to protect the open space. That's actually how community meetings, if anyone hasn't ever been to one, that's how they roll. People are, they skip dinner to come at 7 o'clock to argue against something that is, you know, obviously going to help everyone in the community. But this field becomes this like new project and this thing that then drags you into the world of living, right? It's not the past, and it's not just the pain of the present. It's this is.
And it's interesting because it's also where the physical and like sacred spiritual worlds meet for me, because I could not, I didn't have a guide. It was like a startup. I didn't know how to navigate city politics. I've never done that before. I didn't know community meetings. I was a grieving mother. I just wanted to honor my son and give a gift, serve my community. And
they made it
along.
Real hard for you to give that $1 million. That's all I'm going to say.
Very hard. And I kept thinking to myself, though, what am I supposed to learn from this? There is no way my universe, who I surrendered to, who has taken so much from me, there's no way this is just a coincidence. Like, I didn't believe in coincidences anymore. And there was something I needed to learn from it. And the truth is, my spiritual belief system started dropping in because the game of soccer that I loved to play began guiding me along the way. Mom, you've been on defense for so long. Could attack. And I was like, oh my God, okay. And then I would learn the fundamentals of the game simply throughout this process, basically learning how to merge the inside with my outside. It was wild. And I had never, my projects and startup were real world projects. Yeah. They were fun. They were about play. They were entertainment, but I didn't have that sort of deeper component. And this was a merging of the two, which is, wait a minute. So I can get further in my efforts when we work together. And suddenly I felt like I was this bridge between the world my son Tommy was in and this one where my other son is in. And that was the place I landed as most comfortable. So when I wrote this book, it's the betweeners.
I get it. I totally get that.
And I read hundreds and hundreds of books, and I still do. And I met with hundreds and hundreds of healers. I was on an experiment. I wanted to see, is it possible to heal a broken heart? Is any of this real? And I was going to test it. And what really bothered me very quickly, which is partly why I wrote the book, is A, why don't we learn any of this stuff growing up?
I know.
B, even just how to breathe would be nice in kindergarten. Mm-hmm. And B, no one's going to read half this stuff unless you have a trauma. Because I know I tried before, didn't understand it. And now I was reading hundreds of books and I knew everything they were saying instantly because loss had broken me up that way. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to share this story that I did had no ending. I didn't even know how it would end.
Yeah,
I didn't even know I was writing a book, but I wanted to share it with and infuse all these simple practices, whatever David Kessler's simple messages are, whatever the more spiritual guru's simple messages are, but the ones that really impacted me that I feel like us real world people can digest and begin to implement without it being like, she's a crazy person and I don't understand what she's saying. Yeah. No, I'm a regular working mom like a lot of you. I had this experience. I simply want to share it, take whatever snippets of it resonate, and I hope they help you.
Well, that I wanted to say, because the bulk of my time is spent doing what you just described, which is why don't we teach anybody this? So I go into companies and I talk to them about that thing that you described really well in here and just said, which is like the hit that the body takes. And I explain the neuroscience behind it and I explain the body science behind it. But my job is not just to explain, right? It's not just to, like, a child going through puberty being like, yeah, no, that's because the hormones are happening and that's changing the hair and whatever. That's useful. But what we need then is some idea of then how do people survive that, right? And that's what a memoir to me is about. It is the playbook for this person. They're letting you see how they survived it. And you can come like a buffet and pick and choose which parts might be meaningful to you. And so I just, as a educator, what I wanted to thank you for is that this book is like the temple of describing how important it is to have your energy be inside your body and to attend to that energy, that you have this incredibly active, dynamic, energetic kid who suddenly just doesn't wake up and your world explodes, but it explodes with all these energies that you have to figure out. And somebody says to you at some point, oh, your energy is not inside your body. And you start doing yoga and you start talking to mediums. But all of that to me is, oh, we could spend an hour. You could teach a class without even knowing it about why that's so relevant to people who are grieving, because we're not going to get anywhere that we need to go. You call it healing a broken heart. I think I would call it integrating grief and living with it. same idea, which is how do we go on to have a life after deep and profound and untenable loss? And I think the thing that people say to grieving parents, which makes us want to punch them in the face, they say, I would never be able to survive it.
Oh, right? I had a grief therapist say to me, the pain is forever and will never go away.
Yeah. Lovely. Thank you.
I looked at her, and she was my child's grief therapist, by the way. And I looked at her and I thought, the good news was the reverse happened. Like, she showed me what I didn't believe, that I could not live with. And I didn't want that life. And so I think the biggest message that I can impart on anyone who is grieving any kind of loss is that we can lose and still learn to fully live. And when we do learn to fully live, even if your highs and lows are never exactly what they once were, and mine aren't, do I go real high? Do I go real low? No, but I laugh and I have a lot of meaning, maybe more, probably more than I ever have in my whole life, because I'm driven by a love that's so deep for everything. And I feel honor the people that we love and miss so much is to live for them, to carry them forward, to talk about them, to do what we love to do with them. And even though it's really painful at first, those like tears somehow turn to love and just grows deeper and bigger. And so that's what Tommy's Field is for me. Like, we're growing and learning together. And at the same time, we're giving all these kids places to play, and we're helping our world in a way that's meaningful to us. The world is big. There's so many ways. This is just fields in a park. It's just,
and words, right? The book is also its other gift to the people who maybe are, they have 50-year-old knees like me and will not be playing soccer in LA anywhere. But I really do appreciate what you're describing, which is that nobody wants the legacy of the extraordinary love that you had, the reciprocal love that you had with this extraordinary human that was in your life. Nobody wants the legacy of that to be, and then my life broke and was the worst and nothing good ever happened. And that couldn't possibly be what your beautiful son would have wanted for you. But and nobody wants that. Sometimes we feel like we're betraying our loved one when we laugh for the first time. You write really beautifully about a comedian and going to the gift of laughter. But it's the, like, how do we get ourselves from here to there? That's so hard. And I feel like the words that you write, which I just couldn't put down, really do offer this profound kind of hope of, you're not pretending it's not the worst thing in the world. You are not pretending that it's going to be anything other than excruciating. It's excruciating for you. It's excruciating for your husband and his son and your little guy, Donovan. But when we get to the end of the book, we get Tommy's Field, we get this book, and it sounds like more. It sounds like more things are still coming from that. So I don't want to keep you past our time, but can you tell us a little bit about what is the legacy that's continuing?
Yeah. I just want to add one thing, because I think it's really profound, and it was for me. If I believe that Tommy if I believe I can hear and feel him, then it's possible he can hear and feel me. And it was really made clear to me at one point, don't sink in that grief, because he can feel you and bring, and I want him to soar. I want him to soar as high as he can, wherever he can go, whatever that means, and not my grief and my sadness in any way pull him down. And if it's possible that I hear and feel and see the way I have in so many ways, then it's possible he does too. So that was an incredibly motivating image for me, and feeling, oh no, I cannot sink. I must rise, and he will rise. And like, one day we will chat about this, because we're not doing it again. We're doing, if there's a chance that this happens, stuff happens again, like, we're not doing this again.
We're not doing this one.
Let's do it really well this time.
Finish this.
Let's finish this cycle. So with that said, to answer your question, yeah, we've done two Tommy's fields now in really beautiful areas that need them. And we're in discussions with the city of LA for a third and yet another area that really needs it downtown and towards the East LA. And we have just a model that is clear. People donate, they know exactly what they're donating towards. Yeah. We activate the fields once a year with a tournament that only raises money to maintain and refurbish the fields whenever they're needed, at least for my lifetime. And yeah. That's it. It's pretty simple and clear. And I have no idea how many Tommy's fields Tommy wants, but I'm sure he'll let me know.
Has it gotten easier? Has the process, or is it always, was there always someone who comes ready to object?
The second one was done in a private space, but there's always something I'm not expecting. Yeah. And I'm just learning that I'm not meant or made perhaps for the slick, easy project. Like every time there's a glitch, I just look at it now. Okay, what are you here to teach me now? Yeah. What am I, instead of getting angry at the glitch, I just use it to my advantage and try to find out, okay, where is this leading me now? There must be a reason.
It's interesting because one of the things that I have heard, because I've talked to so many grievers on this podcast and thousands in my work, that there are hard things that people are able to do because they've already done something totally impossible in their life, that they have lived, they have survived something that is not survivable. And so when someone comes at them or presents them with a difficulty or says, you need to care about this, or this isn't going to work, it either riles up their energy or it doesn't. And it's not the same as it would have riled them up before, would have gotten them angry or hot or disappointed or something. And so I love hearing the way that you just described that, because it sounds like you're the woman for the job, because you're not going to let it deter you, that the wrenches, the inevitable wrenches.
Yeah, I worked in my former life as for these visionaries of these startups who were demanding, and they had incredible, the time frames were never realistic, and right. The tasks right. were impossible. And I developed a knack for the impossible. Oh, how hard could this be now? And finding my way and navigating my way. And I told Tommy in that car ride when we were talking about something, I said, nothing's impossible. There's always a way. And you just have to believe in yourself and trust. And I told him, because he was tricky, I go, there's a legal way. There's always a legal way, Tommy, because right. he would have, I don't right. know what he would have done.
He would have found a 12-year-old boy way.
Yeah. And so when this happened, I realized I was stunned. Wait a minute. I can't fix this. There's not a way. And that's why the spiritual connection, I was like, oh no, I got a way. It's not the same. It's not physical, but it could be really interesting, maybe more powerful. In fact, one day I heard him say to me, Mom, we're more powerful this way, with me here and you there. We can do more. Let's go. Only thing that was impossible was fixing him not here. And so when people go through, there's so many different kinds of trauma and loss, and some of them are impossible and can't fix like that. But the rest, building a field, facing challenges, city people fighting, that kind of
no
stuff.
Problem.
We'll find a way through this. Yeah. I don't know how. And so in a way, I've been trained for it my whole life.
Yeah. Oh, it's so beautiful. I want to ask you this just because I noticed it. When you talk about Tommy, you say he left and not died. Is that in reference to sort of everything that we've talked about today, that actually he's...
That word is really hard for me. Death. Yeah. Died. It feels so permanent. And I, like you, my body tells me what's right and what's not. Right. And my gut gets hot and like tightens up really fast when I say those words. And so they're just not right for me. I like to say, I sometimes say he passed away the day he passed away, or the day he left, or the day he departed. Because I don't know where that energy goes,
that's
but
right.
I just feel like it didn't die. So yeah. I don't.
Well, quantum physics would say that's true, right? So they would say that the energy hasn't been destroyed. Thank you for answering that, because I asked that because, and I know this, grievers have really hot and heavy opinions about certain language and how we have to say things, and reminding our listeners that the griever is the expert in their own experience. And I love hearing what the right words are for you.
I feel like everybody has like that, their own permission.
That's right.
To grieve their own way, to find that's whatever right. heal. Like you have to. It's selfish.
Yeah.
It has to be selfish. Yeah. Your body and your soul is basically saying, or mine was, listen to me now. Listen to me now. Like, enough of everybody else. Like, now.
It's the only way. That's the thing. I think your ability to follow polite rules, I describe it as all my other fucks. They just fell away. And so things that I used to be able to, like concerts that I didn't mind going to because my husband wanted to go, I was like, that's like asking me to spend my last $5 on gum. Like, I can't do it. I can't go to that. I used to be able to, but I can't anymore. The energy has to either be reciprocal or at least non-taxing. If it just is expensive, I can't, I'm not that person. Maybe I will be again. Maybe I am a little bit more now, but that is true with language and how we describe ourselves, which is why we don't have to make lists about what you can and can't do. You are the griever. You are the one who decides. And then your experience, you are the expert in your experience. You become a griever with your own vocabulary. This book is so beautiful. And I really hope people will jump on coming to get it and read it. Just, I say this to my listeners, you guys know we'll have copies of the book. So if anyone can't get their hands on it or, you know, can't afford it and want to have a copy for yourself, please just email us and we will send you a copy. I'm really grateful for this conversation today. It was so generous of you. I'm always so grateful to memoirists who share their stories of pain and healing, because it shows us a roadmap. It's not going to be my map, but it shows me compass points always. And I'm sure you have and will continue to have people reaching out and saying, oh my God, thank God you wrote about this. Thank you so much for doing this. And I think that also, like a field in a book, helps remind us that we're like interconnected in all of this, that we're never just, even though grief will tell us that story, it's never just our own grief and our own loss. It's connected to everybody else.
Yeah, like I heard the day he left, it's not just about you, Mom. That's what I heard. This is way bigger than you. And so I'm hopeful and happy that our story is impacting others in the way that they need it.
Yeah.
And that it finds its way. So thank you. I've had the best time.